Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the theme, the invisible rainbow. Being enshrouded in the 5G network and its consequences. My guest from Santa Fe, New Mexico, is Arthur Furstenberg. Arthur is an American scientist, author, activist, who has been on the forefront warning about the environmental and health effects of electricity and electromagnetic frequencies for 35 years, and more recently 5G technology. He was among the early pioneering voices to warn about the risks of electromagnetically emitted EMFs during the start of the Internet and wireless revolution. In 1997, Arthur founded the Cellular Phone Task Force, which serves as a clearinghouse of scientific data about the health risks of radio frequency radiation from cellular phones and base stations and wireless facilities. More recently, he has been the administrator of the 5G Space Appeal to call world attention to the international scientific community's warnings about the assault on our biosphere from thousands of planned satellites to bring 5G to the planet. Arthur graduated Phi Beta Kappa in mathematics from Cornell University. He attended the University of California School of Medicine at Irvine. And Arthur is the author of several books, the most recent being The Invisible Rainbow, A History of Electricity and Life. His websites are cellphonetaskforce.org and 5gspaceappeal.org. Nice to have you with us today, Arthur.
Thank you, Gary. Glad to be here.
We are hearing much more about people who suffer from sensitivities to electromagnetic frequency waves that are emitted from cellulars, their laptops, Wi-Fi gadgets, base stations, and cell towers. I realize the term sensitivity can be misleading and somewhat exclusive because it hides the fact that electromagnetic frequencies are affecting all of us, whether or not we display immediate symptoms. Of course, many people do not have these same adverse experiences and symptoms as do others. There seems to be a large variety of experiences people can have and varied symptoms. Also, even though people may not experience any immediate symptoms from electromagnetic frequencies emitted from their electronic devices, their computer, laptop, cell phones, that does not mean they are immune to these electromagnetic frequencies' detrimental effects on the body's cells. And since you have directly experienced electromagnetic frequencies' adverse effects, I'd like you to share your personal account and others who you know about these symptoms and what kind of impact does it have long-term on our lives. The forum is yours.
Mm-hmm. The idea that most people do not experience immediate symptoms is probably not correct. It's just that as a society, we're in such denial that the discomforts and illnesses and symptoms that we are experiencing could possibly come from, for example, our cell phones or the cell tower down the street or from our Wi-Fi, that people go to their doctors and they get diagnosed with various syndromes that have nothing to do with EMFs, even though their headaches and their anxiety attacks and their depression and their tinnitus and their heart arrhythmias are in fact caused by the wireless technology, which is the microwave radiation that is bathing us from all of these devices and all of this infrastructure. The term electromagnetic hypersensitivity, there is a spectrum, of course, of vulnerability in the population as there is to any other environmental assault. There's a whole spectrum, but the term sensitivity was invented, actually it came from originally from Sweden, but it was invented by patient support groups to describe themselves in the face of denial by their doctors and their family and their friends. And like nobody wants to believe that this stuff that we're using every day is hurting us. So we've labeled ourselves electrically sensitive, but it's kind of a misnomer because people started keeping their cell phones in their pockets, there's been an extraordinary rise in hip replacements because it causes pain. There was a study not too long ago in Ukraine where scientists interviewed college students. Does your cell phone cause you headaches? And they interviewed heavy users of cell phones. At that time, this was a number of years ago, a few hours per day was considered heavy use. And the answers were astonishing, that 75% of the university students said, yes, my cell phone gives me a headache. Like, people don't talk about it to one another. They don't admit it because there's a stigma attached to it. So the label gets put on those of us who recognize it and who escape from it. It's called electrical sensitivity, but we are really not different from the rest of the population. And the most common symptom that almost everybody gets is insomnia. After that, headaches and dizziness and nausea and joint pains and heart palpitations, anxiety attacks, depression. It affects the whole population, and those are acute effects of all this sea of microwave radiation that we are bathed in. The chronic effects include cancer and diabetes and heart disease, and I have chapters on each one of those diseases in my book where I analyze, I basically did epidemiology. I followed up on Dr. Samuel Milam's work in his book called Dirty Electricity, and he went back to the 1930s and 40s, and I took his work and I extended it back to the year 1800, and basically those three diseases started to rise when this world began to be encircled with electric wires for telegraph purposes in the 1840s and 1850s and 1860s. And
okay.
Yes.
I'd like to intercede here. The first time I became aware that there would be a problem was when I was working at WMCA Radio, and one of the engineers would ask me, I keep getting headaches, and I find that my pulse changes from being at home and when I'm in the studio as an engineer. And I said, well, it must be the equipment, but we didn't know this. Your thoughts about all the, excuse me, your thoughts about all the people working around radio transmitters and receivers, people working in companies that have those antennas on their rooftops, people working in television stations and relay stations, because virtually all the information, including right now, that I'm broadcasting, we have an electrometer that tells us whether or not there is a distance we have to keep from the broadcast equipment. Indeed, we keep that distance so it doesn't impact us. But think about all the heavy-duty equipment. Think of all the equipment in an airplane that a pilot is in front of. All that is beaming electromagnetic pulses. Tell us the different ways we are being in contact with it without even being aware of it.
Well, yes, it used to be that the majority of the people who were impacted by radio waves were the people who worked in the broadcast and other industries that exposed them to this stuff. And this was heavily studied in starting around 1950 by the Russians and in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. It was not taken seriously in the United States, so we have this huge literature out of Russia, thousands of studies, on radio wave sickness, where they put people who were working with manufacturing equipment, people in the broadcast industry, people making microwave ovens, et cetera, who were complaining and exhibiting illnesses. Yes, rapid pulse in the long term, slow pulse, high blood pressure, and in the long term, abnormally low blood pressure, and it affects the brain. It caused various permanent brain syndromes, and they put these people in the hospital, and they worked them up, and they, in that part of the world, they began to write textbooks and teach about radio wave sickness in Russian medical schools in around 1970, and to this day, you learn about the different syndromes that were once called radio wave sickness, but unfortunately are not anymore in Russian medical schools. And the reason not anymore is because it's no longer true that the only people who are exposed to those kinds of fields are occupational. It is now true that similar strengths of fields are being exposed. Everybody in the population, if they put a cell phone to their head, they are exposing themselves to those same kinds of power levels that used to be only true for occupational exposure. And this is what is clouding the whole field nowadays, is that people have forgotten about radio wave sickness. Even in Russia, everybody's using a cell phone, and they've forgotten about radio wave sickness. And people are going about pretending like this is doing us no harm, and nobody stops to wonder, how come one out of every two people is getting cancer during their lifetime? How come one out of every six people is on some kind of anti-anxiety or antidepressant medication? How come instead of one out of every 5,000 people, one out of every 68 people is autistic? And this kind of thing only happened to the extent that it is true today. There is such an amount of chronic illness today since the wireless revolution, since the majority of people on the planet started putting cell phones up to their head. And the medical profession is not making the correlation.
That doesn't surprise me. It was the medical profession who denied the reality of restless leg syndrome, Gall 4 syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome. So they're just following a pattern of denial. There was a special on the BBC, Panorama. It was an outstanding special, about 23 or 4 minutes long. They went on to some United Kingdom schools, normal schools. They went inside to where the computers in all the classrooms are run off Wi-Fi. They then measured where a student would sit, the approximation of their head, since your body tends to lean forward when you're looking into a computer. And then they found that there was no safe range in a school for these students. So then they said, how far do we have to go before that electromagnetic pulse coming off that Wi-Fi was no longer able to do damage? They had to go clear out of the school, clear across the playground, before they could get a normal reading. Now you're looking at children now, unlike when I was going to school, we didn't have any computers, and we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have laptops. Now children are, from infants on, and toddlers, they have cell phones, they have all kinds of learning devices that are giving them electromagnetic pulses. So we are a nation that is saturated with this, and yet we live in this collective denialism that unless there's a study showing that it's bad, then we don't use the cautionary principle in science any longer. You know, that's gone. In fact, in a moment, Jesse, our engineer, is going to play you a clip from a senator grilling all of the heads of the major wireless companies who are promoting 5G and ask a basic question. What kind of independent research are you doing to prove that what you want is safe? And the amazing answer is, nothing was done. No studies, independent studies whatsoever. And yet there are 22,000 scientists looking at 10,000 studies as to the adverse effects of this technology on human health. So long before 5G, there have been thousands of scientists who have been warning and writing appeals to stop or slow down the expansion of wireless technology. But corporate interests trump human, animal, and plant life safety. So nothing has been done. And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. Now we are realizing electromagnetic frequencies affects bees and can disorient them, and other pollinators, and numerous insects, amphibians, birds, fish navigation, and probably all plants, animals, and forests, food crops, and so much more. So there are definitely health epidemics on the rise that you've touched upon, like cardiovascular disease, cancer that you mentioned, diabetes, mental health disorders. So give us an idea, based upon our concern, of what the pro 5G industry doesn't want us to know, but they have to know, and why this is going so big right now. Every commercial or every station is broadcasting commercials every day, even in movie theaters. I went the other day to see a film, and the commercial was about 5G and how spectacular it is and connecting everything, and how would anyone ever want to be without it? And that's enormously influencing on people's decisions to have 5G or not. Take us down that road about the industry, its propagandizing, its ability to lie to Congress, or at least be honest with Congress about they haven't done any research, and yet Congress doesn't do a single thing about it, nor do they, nor does the FCC or anyone else involved.
Well, there's a more basic problem here. The more basic problem is that we as a society are in denial. And it's not just that they are lying to us. They, too, are in denial. They too, are holding cell phones in their hands and do not want to believe that it can be all that bad. And it's kind of an abstraction. It's kind of a theoretical thing. It's like the precautionary principle doesn't even apply anymore because we have probably in excess of 30,000 studies saying that radio frequency radiation harms your nervous system, your heart, your brain, your cells, your mitochondria. The research is already there, so we can't say that we didn't know. But it's theoretical to most people. Why? Because they live in a house full of electric wires, and they have wireless internet, and they have cell phones, and as far as they know, and their doctor is telling them, perfectly safe. The other aspect to this is that the world economy now depends on it, that this is a $7 trillion industry by now, and it's a major factor in keeping the economy going. The dependence of everybody on it is incredible, and not only the industry scientists are in denial, but the EMF researchers also are not, they have cell phones in their hands, and to some extent, they're dependent on it. They're doing research on it. They've discovered that it's harmful, but it doesn't change how they live. And when I tell people, throw away your cell phone, we have to give it up as a society, the almost universal reaction that I get is, well, that's impossible. I need it. I need it for my business. I need it for my family, my home life. I only keep it for an emergency, they say. Well, 7.5 billion people want to keep a cell phone for an emergency, the entire wireless infrastructure of the planet's got to be there. The satellites are going to shortly be there so that you can use it in an emergency out in the desert, in the ocean, in Antarctica, anywhere you go. The other thing I wanted to respond to is it's not only disorienting bees, it's killing them. Insects in particular have very high metabolic rates. And what all of this sea of radiation does is it interferes with metabolism. And the reason it does that, and I go into this in my book, is that an electric field acts on electrons. That's what an electric field does. It exerts a force on electrons. Well, in your mitochondria, which is the last step in the digestion of your food, you have what's called an electron transport chain, which moves electrons that are generated by the digestion of your food to the oxygen that you breathe, and the electrons combining with the oxygen is what gives you the energy for life. If you have an electric field constantly, a strong one, pulsating, varying, exerting this pulsating, varying force on all the electrons in the electron transport chain in your mitochondria, you're going to interfere with metabolism. And animals with very high metabolic rates, such as bees and insects, basically it stops their metabolism. They are dying in very high numbers. And we have studies recently from around the world. One out of Germany a couple of years ago, in 70-some-odd protected nature areas in Germany, they captured insects and discovered that there are 75% fewer total insects flying around in Germany than there were a few decades ago. In Puerto Rico, in a rainforest in Puerto Rico, they laid down sticky traps to capture insects, and the number of insects captured in sticky traps in a Puerto Rican rainforest was 97% to 98% fewer than in the late 1970s. Yes, there is land use changes. Yes, there are pesticides, but in Puerto Rico, the pesticide use has been going down. The radio frequency environment plays a huge part in this. Oh, and also I wanted to explain how this relates to diabetes and cancer and heart disease, is that if you slow down metabolism so you cannot digest your sugars, fats, and proteins as efficiently as we should be able to, the sugars back up in your blood and get excreted in your urine, and you have diabetes. The fats back up in your bloodstream and get deposited in your arteries, and you have heart disease. If the electron transport chain cannot utilize oxygen efficiently, you effectively starve your body of oxygen, and cancer is either caused by or thrives in an oxygen deficient anaerobic environment. In fact, that's how it's diagnosed. And I explain this in the three chapters of my book on those diseases.
Okay, Arthur. There is an epidemic of childhood illnesses, many if not most mental, that we are witnessing today, and the younger generations are growing up out of the cradle and using these technologies, as I mentioned a few moments ago, hours a day. Now, based upon the medical literature, which childhood health conditions do you feel can most confidently be associated with electromagnetic frequency exposure?
Autism. There are studies linking autism to childhood exposure to cell phones in particular. There are studies linking ADHD to childhood exposure to cell phones. And there was a study that came out not too long ago by Blue Cross Blue Shield documenting a whole series of health deficits in the millennial generation, which grew up with cell phones. That did not never occurred before, and it started at age 27, such that millennials are now sicker, younger than any other generation in history. There's also a decline in sperm count in young people, which never used to happen. That young people growing up today now have lower sperm count than older people, and that is. Just incredible. And it's because they keep their cell phones in their pockets.
Arthur, let's listen to the congressional hearing where they were called out. They acknowledged they had no science, independent science whatsoever, and yet they were not made to do the scientific research prior to this widespread rollout, which means that I have yet to see any of the congressional people on the panel, including Blumenthal, the senator you're going to hear there, saying this should stop, we should not allow this, let's use the precautionary principle, prove something is safe before it is introduced to the public and to the environment.
Thank you for having this hearing. We've heard from a lot of witnesses, from you today and others previously, about the very important potential of 5G technology. It promises to bring us a new era of connectivity with internet speeds as much as 5 times faster than what we have today, with much lower latency, and that's all a good thing. But 5G, as you well know, also uses higher frequency waves that don't travel as far and will rely on a network of hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of small cell sites. And the question then is, are there any health implications, any public safety implications to those additional sites that are likely to be located close to homes, schools, workplaces, and closer to the ground, correct?
Correct, Senator. Yes.
So in December of 2018, I sent a letter to FCC Commissioner Carr asking him to cite for me recent scientific studies demonstrating the safety of this technology. What research has been done? Where has it been published and compiled? He has essentially failed to do so, and just echo the general statements of the FDA, which shares regulatory responsibility for cell phones with the FCC. If you go to the FDA website, pretty unsatisfactory. There basically is a cursory and superficial citation to existing scientific data saying, quote, the FDA has urged the cell phone industry to take a number of steps, including support additional research on possible biological effects of radio frequency fields for the type of signal emitted by cell phones. I believe that Americans deserve to know what the health effects are, not to prejudge what scientific studies may show, and they deserve also a commitment to do the research on outstanding questions. So my question for you, particularly Mr. Gillen and Mr. Perry, how much money has the industry committed to supporting additional independent research? I stress independent research. Is that independent research ongoing? Has any been completed? Where can consumers look for it? And we're talking about research on the biological effects of this new technology.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you for your focus on the issue. Safety is paramount, and as you alluded to, we rely on the expert agencies, rely on the findings of the FDA and others as to the requirements to keep all of us safe. There are no industry-backed studies, to my knowledge, right now. Happy to visit with you as to what opportunities you think there needs to be more studies, and we're always for more science. We also rely on what the scientists tell us.
So essentially, the answer to my question, how much money? Zero.
I can certainly follow up with you, Senator. To my knowledge, there's no active studies being backed by industry today.
Anybody else know of industry commitments to back research, fund it, support it, to ascertain scientifically the health effect?
Senator, I'm not aware either, but I do know that with small cells especially, you're going to have lower power levels. And, of course, as from a carrier perspective, you want to be able to manage interference so that that interference is the lowest interference possible. So I would think that some of those studies or some
Arthur, information could... what you're hearing is really important because they're acknowledging there's no independent science that they've supported. Now, they have to be aware of the independent science that shows the negative deleterious effects, so they're simply lying. Go through what they said and tell us why you're concerned.
Well, to begin with, I would disagree with Senator Blumenthal that additional research is needed. We have so much research that is already not being paid attention to that more studies will make no difference whatsoever. It will simply go into the same black hole that all of the research that has been done for the last 60 years has gone into. No one's paying attention. You do more research, still no one is paying attention. One of the reasons for this is that Congress passed a law in 1996, it was the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and Section 704 has an amazing clause in it. It says that states and local governments may not regulate wireless technology on the basis of health or environment. And who regulates all of the millions of small cells that are being rolled out? It's the states and the local governments. It's their responsibility to make and enforce land use regulations, and they are forbidden by Congress from regulating on the basis of health. So no matter how many studies get done, the scientists' hands are tied. They can go and testify before your local land use board, and the local land use board is not allowed to pay attention. That's one response I have. Another response I have is that people aren't paying attention because they don't want to pay attention, and this is what I was intimating before. But the other thing that was said in that recording is that small cells, because they're small, have a lower power level, and actually that is the opposite of the truth. 5G is going to millimeter wave frequencies. Millimeter wave frequencies are easily blocked by objects, do not penetrate the walls of your house easily, and because that is true, the FCC has adopted more lenient exposure levels for millimeter waves than for any other part of the spectrum, so that a 5G cell phone, for example, although it is the same size as a 4G cell phone, will be allowed to emit 20 watts of effective radiated power, whereas the previous limit was 2 watts. These small, tiny cells with miniature millimeter wave size antennas will be allowed to emit, I believe it is 300,000 watts of effective radiated power per 100 megahertz of spectrum. That's an incredible amount of radiation, much higher than the tall cell towers people are used to seeing. So these industry spokesmen and even government officials who are going around saying, well, they're small, they emit less radiation. Actually, they're small and they emit a lot more radiation.
Okay, Arthur.
Yeah.
You're familiar with Kerry Trower from Great Britain.
Barry Trower, yes.
Barry Trower. He is extremely knowledgeable about this, These are short little clips. Let's listen. They're only about a minute, 30 seconds each. Let's listen to three or four of his, and we'll continue after that.
Girls are born with all of the eggs they need in their ovaries at birth, their immature eggs. Now, if you're sitting with a transmitter in your lap, and that transmitter is transmitting through your ovaries, and the microwaves are genotoxic, there is a possibility that the microwaves can affect the genetic structure within the eggs. Now, the problem here is that the mitochondrial DNA, the genes inside the ovaries, is irreparable. So if you have a little girl who damages, through this mechanism, the genetic structure in one of her eggs, and she has a daughter, that daughter will carry that genetic problem. It is irreparable. And her daughter will carry that genetic problem because it's irreparable. And every female forever along that line will carry that genetic problem. It is irreparable. What should be happening is you should be measuring the amount of radiation in the room and seeing if it is safe for children. But I can tell you, without even looking, it isn't. And I'll tell you why. Because unlike medication, where there is a safe level for children, they have an adult dose and a child's dose, there is no safety level for microwave radiation for children. Not one. And it is my job as scientific advisor. I read, I translate papers from all around the world. And I have never, ever, no matter which country I've lectured in, which paper I've read, I have never, ever seen a single scientist brave enough to produce a safety level of microwave radiation for a child. There isn't one that exists. And I will tell you why. Because children do not have our immune systems. They're not developed. Their bones are soft. The microwaves penetrate very easily. Inside their bones, they are producing stem cells, which make their immune systems and all other parts of their body. Their skulls are thin. There is a whole myriad of things which can go wrong, and children absorb more radiation than adults because they are smaller. They are nearer the wavelength, so they act as aerials. There is not a single safety level of microwaves for children, not one. The World Health Organization, they have recognized electrosensitivity. Our government says it doesn't exist. The school will say it's rubbish. But in fact, the World Health Organization does recognize and describe electrosensitivity. Now, what that means is that the countries that have tested microwaves within their country, they have all found in excess of 3% of the people are sensitive to microwave radiation. It's not everybody, it's around 3%. The Irish Doctors Association, who are Nobel Prize winners, think it may be as high as 15%. So what we are saying with your children is that a minimum, if somebody said to me, how many of our children are at possible risk of ovarian damage or leukemia or whatever, I would say at a minimum 15, at a maximum 75. Radiation below thermal levels, which is what you've got in your school, can cause neurological, heart problems, headache, fatigue, dizziness, menstrual disorders, irritability, drowsiness, sleeplessness, depression, anxiety, blood-brain barrier problems, neurotoxin problems, you name it, they're listed there. We knew this 30, 40 years ago. Nothing has changed. The only thing that has changed is the name on the box that it comes out of. Knowing the research that we have, and I think I probably have some 40 big research papers showing this causes damage, supposing the worst comes to the worst, and as I say, I know 200 schools now with leukemia clusters, supposing the worst comes to the worst here, do you have insurance? Because if a child gets leukemia or some other genetic damage, and you go in front of a court, in front of a jury, and the jury says, yes, we've got all this evidence, we think this is now to blame, is there insurance? Because if there isn't, this whole exercise is pointless. And I would ask the school to show me the piece of paper that says your children have third-party medical indemnity for microwave sickness. I wouldn't have thought that was an unreasonable thing to ask for. I know it is, because I know they don't have insurance. And the reason I know is that 10 years ago, Lloyds advised all insurance companies to write in an exclusion clause. So there isn't insurance.
Today, that the people working for the wireless companies and the wireless companies themselves, like Verizon, they don't have outside insurance. They have to be self-insured. Well, what happens if one of these companies is sued and there's a class action lawsuit on behalf of millions of people? They're going to file bankruptcy and these people are not going to get diddly squat. So I'd like for you to address that. And then also I'd like to get into some of the specifics about electromagnetic frequencies' direct impact on the biomolecular functions in our bodies and how this increases health risks. I'm very interested in anti-aging medicine. In fact, I was the director of anti-aging medicine and a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for 33 years. And there are natural protocols for slowing our cells' aging process, reversing DNA damage and restoring healthy immune function. Consequently, anti-aging science has been placing a lot of attention on damage to the mitochondria. So if you would please speak about electricity's and electromagnetic frequencies' effects on the mitochondria and how they interfere with cellular electron transport function. And does 5G technology intensify or amplify, even to a greater degree of damage, this interference?
Well, I would like to, before the show ends, say something about the satellites, but first I have to respond to a few of Barry Trower's statements. He says, especially about what he's calling electrical sensitivity, and I addressed that a little earlier, but he's wrong about the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization has not recognized electrical sensitivity. In fact, in the year 2000, Dr. Gro Harlem Brundtland, who is a medical doctor and the former prime minister of Norway, gave an interview. She became the director general of the World Health Organization, and she did not allow anybody to go into her office in Geneva carrying a cell phone because it gave her a headache. And she gave an interview to a Norwegian newspaper about this, and she was undermined by her staff, and she lost her job as director general of the World Health Organization because they said that what she's saying is not substantiated. So not only does the World Health Organization not recognize this problem, but it does not allow even the director general of the World Health Organization to talk about it if they want to keep their job. The other thing that Barry Trower said is that, well, 3% of the population are sensitive. That is just not true. It's much more than 3% today that even recognizes that their illnesses are coming from this stuff. But everybody is getting headaches and anxiety and depression and insomnia and joint pains and hip replacements and pacemakers and heart transplants from all this stuff. And they don't recognize what is the cause. And if you go around saying, as so many of the EMF scientists do, that they are not helping the situation. And the reason that I'm making an issue of it is because our world is getting destroyed. And if these satellites go up into space, which they are doing 120 per month from SpaceX, and 30-some-odd every month or two from OneWeb, and other companies are joining them, but SpaceX alone wants to put up in excess of 12,000 satellites to saturate the entire world with 5G, life on Earth could shortly come to an end. And this business of, well, 3% of the population is sensitive, that gives the rest of the population a reason to continue to believe that this stuff doesn't affect them, not killing the birds and the bees and the frogs and everything else that's alive. And people are going about life as usual when the world is about to come to an end. And it could happen very suddenly when SpaceX's fleet of 1,000, 1,500 satellites that they will have shot up there by the end of this year get turned on. And nobody's paying attention. Everybody's keeping on talking on their cell phones, which is paying for all of this. And nothing is changing. The idea that yes, Barry Trow was spot on that there is no safe level. Not only is there no safe level for children, but there's no safe level for biology. And radio frequency, radiation, electricity, our cells work on this stuff. Our cells communicate electrically. Our nervous system is an electrical organ. Our heart is an electrical organ. This is not a foreign toxic. The toxicology model is wrong. The idea that there is a dose response is wrong. I have never seen a single study that shows that if you lower the power level, you decrease the biological effect. Sometimes the opposite is true. Sometimes if you lower the power level, you increase the biological effect. It depends on the frequency. It depends on your location on the planet and the strength and direction of the Earth's magnetic field. It is a very complex field of study. And everybody is saying the only thing that we should regulate on is power level. And power level is one of the least important factors. It's frequency, it's pulsations, it's polarization, it's all the properties of radio waves that carry information. And yes, they carry information to your computer, and from cell phone to cell phone, they also carry information to your body. And sometimes the lower levels are recognized by your body because the body uses infinitesimal levels to communicate internally between cells. So the whole premise behind regulation and we need more studies is wrong. The whole premise that you should lower the exposure standards is wrong. What we need is no more wireless technology. The first step, we got to stop the satellites from being turned on. If we can succeed in stopping halting the satellite program and at least delaying the turn on while we have a real public open discussion all over the planet of what this could do to life on Earth. And I'm not just talking about the birds and the bees. I'm talking about all animals, us, the fish in the seas. We have this thing that atmospheric physicists study called the global electrical circuit, which is an electric current that we all live in. It goes through our bodies. it travels through our acupuncture meridians. It enters our bodies through the tops of our heads from the sky, and it re-enters the earth through the soles of our feet. We live in an electric field in fair weather of 130 volts per meter. The ionosphere is a source of high voltage that controls all this. And the idea that electricity has anything to do with life has been abandoned for two centuries, and this is why what my book is about. I go into the history of it. My book is called A History of Electricity and Life. When electricity was first discovered and utilized, it was discovered as a medical. It was used in medicine for electrotherapy. Why? Because they thought it was the same thing as the life force. And in fact, it is the same thing as the life force. It's not a mysterious force that nobody knows about that is esoteric. It travels through the ionosphere. It rains down on every living thing, goes through every living thing, keeps them alive, keeps them healthy, goes back into the earth, courses through the earth, courses through the oceans. Every living thing is dependent on the electromagnetic environment that we all evolved in. The electricity in our homes, that is an engineering problem, because the electromagnetic fields from the wiring in our homes, from the wiring in the power lines that serve our homes, that can be shielded if you engineer it properly so that it basically has no external or as low as you want, external electric and magnetic fields. The way cell phones work is the pollution is not accidental, it's intentional. Cell phones will not work unless you are being irradiated and electrified anywhere you go on the planet. So what used to be done incidentally, and the aim was to reduce it as small as possible, now it's being done deliberately, and we have developed a whole infrastructure all over the planet that will not work unless we are being irradiated. And the consequence of that very shortly is that the levels are being increased, not only power level, but 5G is extremely broadband. This is why they're using millimeter waves. They're using millimeter waves because they want to use gigahertz swaths of frequencies, not just kilohertz and megahertz, but they want to use millions and millions and billions of frequencies to communicate between every appliance and virtually everything you own is going to be connected to the internet, and they want it all to happen instantaneously. And the only way to do that is to use huge amounts of frequencies, huge numbers of frequencies, huge amounts of bandwidth, and that is going to destroy every living thing. And it's got to be stopped. And the first thing that people should do is stop using their cell phone, because that is what started this all, and that is what is supporting this industry.
Arthur, we're out of time. I'd just like to wrap up some thoughts, however. Even without any electronic technology or electrical systems whatsoever, we still nevertheless live in an electrically charged world, as you mentioned. The rhythms of our lives depend upon our planet's natural and inherent electromagnetic field. And there is, of course, our own body's natural electric field as well. In fact, there is still so much science that does not know or understand about the interrelationships and effects between these natural fields, let alone their relationship for supporting our lives and our health. There seems to be some kind of natural homeostasis between the two. Yet natural frequencies are not the same as the artificial electromagnetic frequencies produced by modern technology, the cell phones, the laptops, etc. And this introduces 5G technology, because this is being planned to completely engulf our entire lives and our entire environment. There'd be no place on the planet where you can go where you're not going to be exposed. Not just in our towns and cities, but also in space. It's estimated there'll be 50,000 of these satellites up there if things continue. And this is an area that you've investigated and no one is talking about, not even most opponents of 5G. So I'm glad that you've shared your concerns, because these are just lies upon lies that we're hearing from the media and in advertisement, and that shouldn't be. So I don't want to put too much emphasis on this because I believe it is only a hypothesis, but some believe that the strange mutation in this new coronavirus, which is novel compared to other corona strains, may be due to electromagnetic frequency exposure. There's no proof of that. It's merely a speculation, but it's one that we should at least examine with everything else, since we don't know where it came from and what actually caused it. In any case, I want to thank you for taking your time to come on today. The book is The Invisible Rainbow, A History of Electricity and Life. The websites are cellphonetaskforce.org, as well as 5gspaceappeal.org. So, Arthur Furstenberg, thank you very much for being with us today. It's Arthur Furstenberg, and he, by the way, is a highly esteemed person in the field, a real scientist, and an activist scientist to boot. And so we appreciate him being on today. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Mother, there's too many of you to cry.